I guess one of the really weird things about the lockdown, and one of the things that will stick with me, and it's sort of sticking with me now, is the fact that we've actually learned all these lockdown habits, and now we take them for granted. It's incredible, isn't it, how resilient we are, and how quickly we adapt, and, you know, get used to a whole new way of life. And now, of course, we've got to unlearn that, haven't we? There's all sorts of things we've got to unlearn. For example, you know, we've got to unlearn that just because you've got elasticated waist trousers, it doesn't mean you can just pull them open and ping them and, you know, rearrange yourself down there, gents. You know what I'm talking about. You can't do that in the post office because people can actually see it. You're not in a Zoom meeting anymore. They can see what's happening underneath the table. And also, just, you know what, it's why with elasticated waist trousers do you think to yourself, oh, you know what, hang on a second, I've got an elasticated waist, I'm just going to have a little scratch. Vicar, I didn't see you there. The vicar is actually under my desk right now, which, you know, in the countryside is considered to be perfectly normal. But, you know, there's lots of that stuff, isn't there, you're doing. Like, you know, whenever you see a light now, like the ring light you've got on your webcam, you know, you try automatically, if you wear glasses, just to line it up with your eyeball so it looks like you've got a groovy sort of robot laser eye. You know, it's just, it's natural. I do it all the time. But the thing is, of course, you realise that if you do that in a shop window, there's other people on the other side of the shop window and they can see you standing there and it looks like you're eyeballing them in a really weird and threatening and aggressive way, trying to line your eyes up. You know, with any light source or reflection that you see. Because you sort of like budgies, aren't you? You sort of like budgies in lockdown. You become obsessed with your own reflection. You constantly, you'll notice this. This is how to spot it, right? You'll be in a Zoom meeting and you'll notice someone who keeps, you know, sort of nodding and looking very, very intently at you while very slowly they're moving their hand up and, you know, adjusting their hair. And you know that actually they're just looking at themselves. And because we all do that. Come on, how many of you listening here actually looking at the other people in your Zoom meeting as opposed to sort of looking at yourself and thinking, oh, look, you know, is that a blemish? How do I look younger, don't I, than my age? And, oh, God, my hair looks dreadful. I've got to adjust that. And, oh, quick nod. And is everyone else laughing? Quick laugh. Oh, no, they're not laughing. They're grimacing because, you know, someone's just revealed some tragic personal news. Oh God. Yeah, pretend that that's, you just laugh when you get, you know, into anxious and difficult situations about other people's tragedies. Oh God, this is awful. Don't do that. Don't do that, I guess. And you know, I guess the other thing is this, is I don't know about you, but I've sort of learned a way of holding my mobile phone directly underneath the webcam. And if you get it right, it looks like you're looking at the webcam when you're actually looking at your phone. And this is... You know, just, you know, a hot tip for that is make sure it's on mute. That's very important. And, you know, also, you know, make sure that they can't see it reflected in your glasses. Similarly as well, you know, if you notice how people will be talking, but as they're talking, their eyes keep darting down to a very particular sort of, you know, angle. It's like they're darting down to the corner of the screen. You look at them. And you're talking and you look at them and they'll be nodding and smiling randomly. Doesn't matter what you're saying. They're just going... Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. And all the time their eyes are darting down to the corner of the screen. And that person is shopping on Amazon right there. We all know it. We all know that's what you're doing. And the reason why your eyes keep darting down is because you're imperceptibly trying to move your arm without anyone noticing so you can get your mouse pointer over to the buy button and click it. And we know it's going on. And they'll be doing it. And it's always the same because they'll go, their eyes will be darting. And then you'll hear the mouse click. I mean, everyone can hear it, right? It doesn't matter if you do it slowly or not. It's not like it's either a click or a click. I mean, you know, it's always the same sound. And then after you've heard the click, they always do the same thing. They always sort of go like this. And then they look back at the screen. And as you finish, they say, sorry, I'm sorry. I got a bad connection. I didn't quite hear that. Can you say it all again? You're listening to Lockdown Lemonade, a show all about the coronavirus lockdown with me, Andrew Keith Walker. And, you know, while we've been locked down, not just once, twice, but now three times, I've been enjoying the company of people via webcams and talking to them about their positive life lessons and how they've managed to get through these strange times. And what I've learned is this, you know, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. So when life gives you lockdown, make lockdown lemonade. OK, Okay, we are back for the second half of season three, and we have got a jam-packed few episodes coming up for you. We've got, obviously, Debbie from Little Barn Cakes is back with her 1940s economical cookbook recipes, and this week she's actually got a recipe of something you might actually want to make and eat, so that makes a nice change. And also, Lainey Bertino, my BFF from America, is back, and she is going to be giving us a great cocktail, which has been made almost perfectly for Piers Morgan. Yes, it's called A Bitter Pill. And the legendary Laura Hux is going to be back. Yes, my city slicker turned gardener is back. And she's got a great new horticultural project where she is growing funky mushrooms. No, don't call the police. They're real for eating. I mean, obviously you eat magic mushrooms too. I mean, they're not magic mushrooms. She's not growing. She's not making drugs. She's not a drug dealer. Sorry, Laura. You know what? That went to a weird place. Anyway, before we get going, I don't know about you, but I'm wondering, is there any sort of spooky medieval prediction which might have, you know, told us something more about what's going to happen as the lockdown winds down? I wonder if there's anything in the writings of Nostra Lockdownus.
Wedge, bring me more wine and a packet of salty snacks. I don't know. I mean, the roasted skin of pork with crispy salts. No? Do you have finely sliced potatoes with the spices of the Orient sprinkled upon them? No? Nothing? No, no one likes prawn cocktail. Fine. Dry roasted, yes, dry. The roasted nut that has been dried, I will take that with just booze. Mostly booze, just booze. And so, my vision, I must scribe it down. My parchment. My scribe. Oh, yes, okay. I did wake this morning most aroused by portents of a future flung many years hence. And I did see, before the fiery fingers of dawn did come upon the land, I saw 12 ducks in flight. The 12 ducks did tell me that on the 12th day of the month called April, so shall there be a change in the village. For those who have grown shaggy on their heads and unkempt around the fringes of their swimming garments, once again can they be tended to, yes, tended to by the kindly cutters of hair and by the waxers of pube. Yes, soon shall everyone be out again, wearing pants most skimpy and without that beanie cap, and surely we will look upon them and say, oh, look, have you been to the spa? Ah, and then I did see it. A fifth duck. Wait, a 13th duck. these visions aren't always clear. I saw a pussycat. No, a 13th duck did fly, which told me, the gyms will once again reopen, and thighs grown thunderous from too long spent on sofas. Thighs will once again be subjected to the evil magic of a shouty young man sitting atop a bike without a proper wheel. Whatever a bike is, there must be a sort of horseless horse carriage. And, it's not clear. And wait, then a 16th, a 15th, no, 16th duck. Ooh, another duck flew by, basically. And this duck was different. It did look foreign. And I thought, ooh, yes, in Chester of the Coal, so shall the zoo reopen. Yes, just in time for the holiday known as a Astra. Yes, and then one final thing. The drive-in cinema tool shall reopen, whatever that is. And many people will go there under the pretext of watching movies, but in fact, they be dogging. and know what that is. So speaks Nostraluctanus. Wedge! Wedge! Yes, more nuts. Yes, these nuts.
Hey, Bubble Buddy, and all you lockdown lemonaders. It's me, the cake lady, you know, from littlebarncakes.co.uk. So this week, I was flicking through my 1940s economical cookery book, and I thought, I think I'll make a cake this weekend. Well, I am a cake lady after all. And I spotted this, rich plum cake. I thought, I like plums. So if you've got your pens and paper ready, here we go. 12 ounces of flour, 10 ounces of sugar, 3 pounds of sultanas, 2 ounces of cherries, 6 eggs, pinch of cinnamon, 1 glassful of brandy, 10 ounces of butter, 1 pound of currants, 2 ounces of almonds, 1/4 pound of peel, teaspoonful of spice, and a little grated nutmeg. You need to line a cake tin with well-buttered paper. Prepare the fruit by cleaning and picking. Chop the almonds and peel. Cut the cherries into quarters. Sieve the flour, cinnamon, nutmeg and spice together and mix well. Work the butter and sugar together until they are of a creamy consistency. And beat in each egg separately, adding a little flour if the mixture shows signs of curdling. Naughty curdling. Then stir in the dry ingredients, adding the fruit, alternately with the flour. Add the brandy, and if necessary, a little milk to make it of the correct consistency. Rich fruit cakes should not be mixed too moistly, otherwise the fruit sinks to the bottom. It should be just sufficiently moist to fall off the spoon when jerked very gently. Put into the prepared tin and bake in the oven. Oh, sounds lovely. But hang on a minute, where are the plums? Well, that's not right. I was hoping for a rich plum cake. Damn it, I love plums as well. Have a good weekend, everyone. Bye!
Hi, guys, how are you? I've got something a little bit different for you this week. I've decided to start an experiment. Specifically a mushroom growing experiment. I love mushrooms. I eat a lot of them in various forms with my cooking, and even in salads. And they do cost a bit of a fortune. And the selection that you can normally get your hands on at most supermarkets isn't amazing, or it's super expensive to get the good ones. So I thought I'd give it a go and see if I could grow my own. So I found this amazing company called Urban Farm It. So it's Urban Farm hyphen It. If you Google that, you can find them very easily. And I got a kit for growing 2 different types of mushrooms. One is something like white elm, and the other one is blue oyster. So basically, it takes a lot longer than I thought. I thought I'd get this kit, mess around with some seeds or such like, and have mushrooms in a week or two. It's actually going to take me a good couple of months. But as they say, the best things come to those who wait. So I'm in the first stage at the moment, and it does seem slightly more complicated than I thought it would be. And I've read that you do need to follow the instructions really carefully, or it might go a bit tits up. So I've definitely been doing everything they say, like washing my hands before touching stuff and trying to keep the exact temperatures that they tell you to and stuff like that. So if you guys decide to give it a go, definitely stick to the rules and read the paperwork before you start. So anyway, stage one, which I'm about a week into now, basically involved me filling up a black bag with boiling water, and inside the bag was a mushroom compost substrate. And then you leave that to cool down, and then you have to drain the excess water, and you're left with this sort of weird smelling sludgy stuff. And then what you have to do is get your mushroom spawn, which you keep in the fridge because you have to keep it between 0 and 5 degrees, I think. You get your mushroom spawn, you put it in the bag, and then you basically put your hand in the bag, elbow deep, and try to mix your spawn around the substrate evenly throughout the whole bag. So I've done that for both my white elm and my blue oyster mushrooms. Then you stick them in another bag in a dark box, and you have to keep them at very specific temperatures for about 17 to 22 days. So as I say, I'm about a week in now. So in about another week or two, I'm going to open the box. And what we're hoping to find is something called mycelium, which is the vegetative part of mushrooms or fungi. You often see it in the garden. You might find that you're gardening sometimes and you find a bit of earth and it's full of like white, sort of very fine, cottony sort of structure. And that's your mycelium. And that's a really good thing to find when you're gardening. So don't worry about it. Anyway, so when I open up these boxes, fingers crossed, I will find some of that. That means it's all going in the right direction and my mushrooms are starting to grow. From then on, I'll be moving on to stage two, and if it works, that is. And I'll keep you guys updated as to where I am with my mushrooms. And hopefully in a month or 6 weeks, I can let you know that we've had a crop of mushrooms and they taste amazing. And that was my little ditty for you this week. See if I can inspire anyone to have a go at growing some mushrooms. And then in 2 or 3 months, you can have mushrooms on toast. How exciting. Thank you very much.
Hello, fellow Lockdown Lemonade listeners. This is Lainey Bertino, Andrew's BFF from America, and for this week's Royal Lockdown Cocktail Recipe, we're drinking a little something based on Piers Morgan's reaction to Oprah's Harry and Meghan interview. It's called Bitter Pill. The description reads, aged rum and Fernet make for a spirited match in the assertive Bitter Pill cocktail from Los Angeles bartender Richard Swan. So, while Piers might storm off the set like a toddler, we're going to take our medicine and enjoy it, too. In addition to aged rum and Fernet Branca, which you may recall from earlier in the season is my favorite libation, the Bitter Pill calls for an egg white. Bartenders have been using egg whites in cocktails like the Ramon Fizz and Pisco Sour since the 1800s. Egg whites soften acids from the citrus and spirits and add a rich, silky foam texture without flavoring the cocktail. If you're squeamish about raw egg whites or you have a compromised immune system, just leave out the egg whites. Meanwhile, gather your ingredients. You'll need 1.5 parts aged rum. The original recipe uses Zaya 12-year, which is an amazing rum. I'm using Diplomatico, which is a very, very good rum. And then half part Fernet Branca, half part fresh lime juice, half part sugar syrup, and 1 fresh egg white, unless, of course, you choose to leave it out. Egg white drinks are best mixed by shaking first without ice, called a dry shake, then adding ice and shaking the drink again for at least 30 seconds. Some say, until your arms hurt. This ensures the egg is fully integrated with the rest of the drink. Strain into an ice-filled glass and garnish with an orange peel twisted over the drink to release the oils. If you've been listening to past episodes of Lockdown Lemonade, you'll understand that an orange peel can dramatically change the profile of a drink. And might I just add, this is one bitter pill I want to swallow. Salud!
When this episode goes out, the first full episode of the Walking on Air podcast is going to be up and running and live. Tell us about it. What's coming up? Who's going to be on the show?
So my first guest is a Nordic walking instructor called Vicky Welsh, and she is being interviewed and just telling us what Nordic walking actually is. And she's very articulate, and she's actually organising a big festival later this year in Bristol. So she's talking about that and about her book that she's writing all about Nordic walking and walking. So that is episode one. I've got somebody who is the current world champion of Nordic walking, because they do have world championships every year around the world. So I'm interviewing him in episode two. Then I've got somebody which you would find very interesting, talking about how she recovered from a really severe back pain issue where she'd had one operation already and was facing a second. And just through Nordic walking and Pilates, she has resolved all her back pain problems. Wow. Which is fascinating, actually. Then I'm chatting to another man who is also, they're all Nordic walking qualified instructors, but he has had 20 years as a mental health practitioner. So we're talking about the way that Nordic walking and exercising in the great outdoors can benefit your mental health.
Wow. So you just reeled off like five episodes in advance.
Yes.
Wow. Because I'm going to be brutally frank with you. I had no idea who I was going to interview this week until I sent you a message on Friday. I said, please, God, come on my podcast. I'm now feeling massively de-skilled. My world's collapsing. It's terrible. Jesus, Mary, you're fucking killing me here, man.
That's the voice of my old friend Mary Tweed, who you remember as Mary Had a Little Lamb Tweed, because she used to give birth to lambs once. I mean, not she didn't actually give birth to the lambs. She had sheep that did that. But she, anyway, never mind. Mary is a Nordic walking instructor. And if you go back to season one of Lockdown Lemonade, episode 12, you can hear all about her journey into Nordic walking. But we're not here to talk about that today, because Mary has now got a Nordic walking podcast.
I've had someone on the show who is a podcaster from the point of view that they co-host a business podcast with me. I've never had an actual bona fide legitimate actual podcaster on before, and now you're on, and this is it feels like we should have a sort of magic rings or something that we can touch together over the Zoom and, you know, send up a signal into the sky or something like that. A decent Wi-Fi signal.
Andrew, all my imposter syndrome feelers are being fired up right now, because when you say I'm a podcaster, I have released one 2-minute trailer so far. My next podcast will go out tomorrow. So I'm right at the beginning of my podcasting journey on my own. I used to, many years ago, podcast shipping market reports for my husband's business.
For Coracle.
The Coracle, yes, but that was just a question of reading them out loud and then editing them, whereas this time I'm actually interviewing people.
You had quite a following, though, just to say, back in the day.
Yes.
You had quite a following as Mary, the voice of the shipping market reports. He's told me this. He said that they used to get fan mail for you and all sorts. You were a sort of pin-up girl of the marine insurance industry.
I think we had over a million downloads, and I think we possibly had 2 emails ever as fan mail. So I don't know what that's like for a percentage. You know,
okay, fine. 2 things here. Number one, you just said a million downloads, so I'm basically going to shut up shop and jack it in.
No, that was over several years, though. That was.
Then you said you got 2 fan emails. You know what? I wish I'd got fan emails. I've had death threats, no fan emails. What made you get back into the pod? Because you have a lovely voice. For a start, you have great voice talent, no doubt.
Thank you, Andrew. Flattery is wonderful. Thank you.
So what happened? I mean, obviously, you're a Nordic walking instructor.
I am. And then lockdown happened and I couldn't work. And I basically haven't taught a single lesson since October that's not true. I've taught 2 lessons. But then we had the second lockdown. We came out of that, and then one of my children got COVID, so we went into isolation, and by the time we came out, we were back into the next lockdown. So, yes, I haven't been able to work, and I was thinking, what can I do as another string to my bow? And Nordic walking is still a fairly unheard of form of exercise. And it's a problem that all instructors face. And we regularly ask the question of how can we get the message out there? And I just thought, well, hang on, I've spent my life listening to podcasts and I've done it in the past. That's how we can get the message out there to far more people. And so each episode will be about 20 minutes and focusing on one particular issue. So it's not a long, rambling podcast. It will just be short and sharp and to the point. So people, if they want to know about how it can help back pain, they can look up that one. I've got another one on coming up soon. I haven't recorded it yet, on walking in the mountains, for instance. So it's all little snippets, and there will be ones on cancer, Parkinson's, pregnancy, all sorts of things, you name it.
Wow. So suddenly the fact that I didn't think, when you say pregnancy, I mean walking when you're pregnant, not walking and coming back pregnant, because I mean, now you're selling it to me.
No, I think that would be beyond my remit, walking whilst pregnant, walking with support while pregnant.
So it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because walking sits in this weird, in the West, we have this weird view of walking, don't we? Because walking is seen as very much the poor relation to running in the fitness scene. And yet we know that, and I know, because you know, the reason why we didn't record this last week is because I've been, after COVID, I've been getting back into jogging and exercising, and I tweaked my back and I was in a filthy, sulky mood, and I couldn't bear to hunch over my microphone for 20 minutes and do the interview. And that's, I blame jogging for that. I like running from the point of view that, you know, it makes me less anxious about dying prematurely. The actual physical act of running is, you know, like having, being tortured. Walking, where does it sit in terms of exercise and health benefits? Because is it a myth that you need to be like smashing your knee joints and messing your back up to really be feeling any health benefits of stuff?
That is a complete myth. So we were all designed to walk. That was our primary function, to go out to do our hunter gathering. We were supposed to walk, maybe the odd short, sharp burst of running so that we could snare that wild boar. But we were essentially designed to walk. How many times have you injured yourself from walking, Andrew?
Oh, I mean, I'm walking drunk, a few.
Not walking drunk, just plain walking.
Sober walking, I can't actually think of one.
So there you go. So you are far, you're not like, well, you're very unlikely to injure yourself from walking, whereas with running, you face the very real possibility of getting a stress fracture or some sort of stress injury. Now, I'm a runner too, so I do enjoy running, but I combine the two. With Nordic walking, by adding poles, you're actually working the upper body as well as the lower body. So you're working 90% of your muscles. With running, you're only working the lower half of your body really effectively. So by working the upper half as well as the lower half, you're working the cardiovascular system. You're working the bones in your arms as well as in your legs. It is a much more gentle form, and you can actually, because you're powering through the pole, you can get your heart rate right up. So recently when I interviewed this chap who's the current world champion of Nordic walking, he got his heart rate to 180 beats per minute. Would that be per minute?
Hope so.
Just through Nordic walking. And it is derived from cross-country skiing. And as you know, they're the people with the highest VO2 max output. It is one of the...
VO2 max is, that's oxygenation
measure
in the blood?
It's a measure of your ability for stamina and also a cardiac output.
Okay. Okay, fine. So that's cross-country... So it comes from that, because... There is an interesting thing here, I guess, about the fact that, you know, walking doesn't feel like exercise. Is that because we're designed to do it?
I think that's because we're designed to do it. But actually, if you go for a brisk walk, the government's guidelines are that you do 150 minutes minimum of moderate exercise, and a brisk walk counts as moderate exercise. And just by raising your heart rate, which naturally raises a bit with brisk walking, that is actually sufficient. Now, we are all designed, we're all conditioned to believe that you have to come back pouring with sweat. You have to have aching muscles. You have to have beaten your PB for it to count. And you absolutely don't. You just need to make sure that you're incorporating movement as much as possible into your daily life. So not just going out for 1 hour and really hitting it hard. You want to try and put in lots of walks throughout your day if you can, as well as lots of other movements like squats and reaching up to get something high out of a cupboard and some twists and jumps. You want to think of movement a little bit like eating your five a day of fruit and veg. You want variety. So you have a dog, you have to walk your dog, but you could turn that daily walk into a workout, into a complete body workout by adding a pair of poles. And you're getting that upper body exercise as well. You're getting lots of rotation. Part of the Nordic walking technique is there's a certain amount of rotation in the within the shoulders. And that is incredibly beneficial for the spine and for back health and for strengthening all the postural muscles. Because one thing about modern day life is we all do spend far too much time hunched like this over our computer. Yeah. Whereas with Nordic walking, there's a real emphasis on correct posture. And by engaging those postural muscles and strengthening them, you are protecting your back and preventing the sort of injury that you suffered from last week.
What, between my shoulder blades? Because that was a weird one. I mean, tweaking your lower back, you think, oh, well, you know, well, that's just lifting heavy stuff. A weird, achy, stabbing pain between my shoulder blades. That was, you know, because I immediately went to my wife and said, oh, my God, it's cancer. It's over for me. It's over. Tell the boys I love them, and then drank half a bottle of gin. So what is the plan? What can we expect from the rest of the season? We've got 20 minutes. It's practical advice. It's tips. What do you want people to take away from it? Do you want them to start walking?
Absolutely. I want to encourage as many people as possible to start walking. In this country, I can't remember the stat off the top of my head, but it's something like 46% of adults do less than 10 minutes walking a month. Yeah. And so what I want is that people get inspired. If lots of people have been inspired during lockdown to start walking, and if you've enjoyed walking, why not just take it up a little bit and a notch and go and join your local Nordic walking group and learn how to turn your walk into a workout. We always say, if you can walk, you can Nordic walk. If you aren't walking that much at the moment, then just try and get out for an extra 5 minutes every single day. 5 minutes a day is, you know, that's 35 minutes a week. And maybe next week you can do 10 minutes a day and you can just slowly improve your health that way. If we all walked 150 minutes minimum per week, we would save so many billions every year from the NHS. It reduces the risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, strokes, cancer even, all these chronic long-term conditions which can be prevented, many of them, just from the simple act of increasing the amount of minutes a day that you're walking. And I'm talking minutes, not hours.
And as I left Mary, I thought to myself, you know, maybe that's the best lemonade recipe we've had all season so far. I mean, no offense to my other guests, but that is a good one. You can change your life just by spending a few minutes every day and doing something a bit different. That seems really powerful. And maybe, you know, that's the thing that we can actually take some comfort in as well, because, you know, honestly, big changes really suck, don't they? That's the lockdown's been big changes, and everyone's, you know, grown massive bikini lines and terrible hair and grown a beard and, you know, their nails have gone weird and they look like something out of a documentary on hermits. And, you know, actually, you know, maybe small changes like, you know, showering regularly and, you know, wearing proper clothes again as opposed to living in your pajamas, those things could really change your life. So if you really want more of that awesome stuff, go to walkingonairpodcast.co.uk and listen to Mary's podcast. It's available as well on all good podcasting platforms, as is this one. And you know what I'm going to say now, right? I'm going to say, just, you know what, just please, God, listen to her podcast and mine. Listen to both our podcasts. Listen to both our podcasts. Give both our podcasts 5 stars. We just want 5 stars. Please, please, just listen to our podcast because we desperately want your attention. Please, 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 give me a... This is my podcast. Please, 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 please. Oh, please. I'm sorry. And Mary wouldn't do that at the end of her podcast. podcast. She's got too much dignity. I'm not. I'll do anything. Please, God, just listen to my... I'm sorry. I've said too much. Okay, I love you. I'm sorry. I love you. Bye-bye. Listen to Mary's show. I love you. Bye-bye. Okay, love you. Bye-bye. And my show too, but mostly hers. All right, I love you. Bye.